Blog Talk Radio.
We will begin to get to the work of working on ourselves. And so welcome to the show. Welcome to the Empowerment Network. Again, it's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. We'll be talking to Brother Booker. And what we want to do first is we're going to talk about the NAAEA. That NAAEA is the National African American Empowerment Association. And the goal of the association is to ensure that the needs of the African American community are met through the development of programs and services that educate, inspire, motivate, and empower the African American community. And so what we want to do is use this platform and other platforms to begin to develop our people, to provide them with information in the area of politics, economics, athletics, which is health, fitness, wellness, nutrition, and then culture and education. And so we'll do the work of working on ourselves by developing programs and activities that enhance us to become better citizens and better community members and better family members. And so also don't forget to go out to our website, www.naaea.weebly.com. Join us, become a member. We have great membership packages, the basic packages. Join, become a member, and let this network blossom around the country. So now I'm going to bring in today our brother and good friend, Brother Booker. Are you there? Let's see if we can get him in. Okay, in the meantime, until I can pull them in, we're going to talk about a little bit more about the NAAEA. And so what we want to do with the NAAEA is to address our needs. And we know we have needs in our community. And a part of what we do is our Saturday show. And that Saturday show allows us to have an opportunity to discuss issues that are relevant. It's a safe space, right, for you, African-American, to discuss your views and your positions on any issue or topic that we bring up. The whole idea is to once again create a safe space where we can have conversations and that we can get to the business of looking at ourselves, examining issues in the community, and then doubling down in terms of creating that space, that positive space where we can begin to grow and blossom as a community. And the way that we can do that is by understanding. And so as we continue to create a dialogue and create an understanding through commitment of conversation and not just getting mad because somebody says something you don't like, but trying to understand the position that he or she has taken and the sum total of what it is that our experiences bring. We have a lot of experiences and a lot of viewpoints that we have in this country because of our experiences. And so we want to be in a place where we share that perspective without disrespecting one another and without having negative conversations. I think we can talk. I think that we can understand that in our community, there are going to be issues that we have to face that divide us and how we're going to be able to come together to coalesce as a community is what we want to do. So join our Saturday show, 2 p.m. every Saturday. You're welcome to join in. 845-277-9250 is the number to call. And so we will I'm trying to get this brother in live, but it won't let me in. So, Brother Booker, if you're listening to me, would you do me a favor and call right back to our line 452-779-2250, and hopefully we can get them in to get this show started. In the meantime, again, you want to use this opportunity to learn more about the NAAEA, about a national organization that is founded by us, that is developed for us and with us. And so it is a membership-based or driven organization that looks to empower our people. And so empowerment is important, and we want to be able to empower our people to become the best people that we can be today and every day. Brother Booker, are you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
All right. Welcome. Welcome. Yes, sir. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. We had to work through some technical difficulties, but we're live right now. So I wanted to talk to you today about what we kind of mentioned on last Saturday's show as a topic of discussion, what black people need to know. And I know you shared some points of view, and we had some other callers share their points of view. But we'll start with that, and we'll just kind of have a conversation and see where it goes. But I want to have community conversations to get input and feedback and create a dialogue that will help us work through some of our differences, look at ourselves, and become the best people that we can be. So let's start out with, what do you feel black people need to know?
I think we need to know in our past. We need to understand yesterday. We need to understand what happened yesterday, how it's affecting today, and how it will affect tomorrow. And I know a lot of times we don't want to look back at the past. You know, we'll say, "Oh, I wasn't there back then," or "I didn't," you know. But that was back then. That was yesterday. You know, we need to move forward and do what we're gonna do doing moving forward. Well, yeah, we do need to move forward, but we cannot neglect the past or what has happened. And I remember when I was in high school, I hated history. I mean, I hated it with a passion. I hated my history class so much, I cut it. You know, I would cut history every day, and I cut it so much they finally took me out of it and put me in the study hall instead of make me go to history, because I didn't want to go to history. I didn't want to learn about Uncle Tom's Cabin and Nat Turner and Harriet Tubman and all that. I didn't want to hear about that. You know, just I had that attitude then. You know, that's back then and like that. I'm moving forward. I grew to realize. When an old man told me one day, he said, "Look, you got to realize something, that to understand the present and the future, you must first understand your past." And we don't do that. I mean, I now have a better understanding of my past, my life. When I look back on my life,
mm-hmm.
and all the things that I have witnessed, I have lived through, I have seen, it gives me a better picture, a better understanding of where we are today. I can see the past in today. And as a people, when I look back, like last weekend, I did a thing for Facebook I just posted last night, where I said in January 1, 1863, when Abe Lincoln freed the slaves,
mm-hmm.
we had to understand something. It wasn't free black people walking off of those plantations.
Mm-hmm.
It was niggers walking off that plantation. What we were when we went into slavery, when we were forced into slavery, weren't those people when we came out on January 1, 1863.
Mm-hmm.
We had been totally destroyed. And when I started looking back at slavery and really focusing on what was the purpose of slavery, what was the goal of slavery, I came to the conclusion the goal of slavery was to destroy a group of people, a race of people, mentally, so they would ever be subservient to you.
Well, let me ask you this. let me ask you this, because you said that word, we came out as niggers. And for some of our audience, that word could be offensive, right? And we know what it means. And, you know, if white people say it, it could be fighting words. But when you say it, can you talk about the context and what you mean it in? And what, let's define what that is.
Well, the definition of the word has changed a number of times over the years. Back in the day, years ago, it was defined as evil, wicked, you know, conniving, nasty. When I was growing up, and that's what and that's what I guess aggravated us so much that white folks used it. But as you said, it didn't aggravate us when we used it, because I guess we had changed the definition. In our context, of it, he's just a cool dude, you know. And it varied. It had different meanings, you know. It could mean that you ain't nothing. Oh, nigga, you know, it could, it's how we use the term. But with us, it had different meanings, and we ran with
it. That's right.
Yeah, and as they said, we gave it jazz. We gave it rhythm, you know, to where nigga, you know, it became something that, because it was used so much, we turn it around and say, okay, because we're being called, that's making something good.
Mm-hmm.
And not something bad. It later became, defined in Webster as a Negro or a member of any dark-skinned race.
You know,
remember that at first it was filthy, lazy, you know, evil, wicked. Then it progressed to, okay, now we're telling you what it was. Now we're going to tell you who it is. A Negro, you know, or a member of any dark-skinned race.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one night knowing that definition kept me out of a fight, you know, because I was stationed on Guam in the Navy back in the 80s. And I lived in a village on the island of Guam called Marizo. And it was one of the toughest villages on the island. I guess you could say it was like that island hood. Well, really, the town we had to drive through to get to that village, Agana, was known as really the hood, and it was so tough that it was restricted to military people. We couldn't go there. In fact, it was so bad that the McDonald's was off limits to military members. Now you think of that. You're in a, you know, another island country, hosting the U.S. military, and you can't go to McDonald's, because every time you go to McDonald's, the islanders are whipping sailors behind. Okay? I used to have to drive through that village every day going home, and I lived in the village right next to it. And I then would go to that village in the evening and play basketball. I would hang out with the little, the Chamorro guys, the Guamanian guys, and play basketball. Okay. And so one night I'm down there, I'm playing basketball with the guys like I always did. And a dude down the other end of the court, he yells, "Oh, man, F that nigga." And guys that knew, one of the guys that knew me, I'd played ball with before, he said, "Man, chill out. He said, "Man, F that nigga, I don't mean that nigga. And the guy said, "Man, chill out, man, that's book. You know, book all right." And so I walked down, you know, closer to him. And I said, "Man, let that man say nigga if he want to say nigga." And they said, "What?" I said, "Let him say nigga if he want to say nigga. That's all out here. A bunch of niggas."
Hmm.
And they said, "What you talking about? What you talking about?" I said, "The word is defined in the dictionary as a Negro, mwa, or a member of any dark-skinned race. All y'all. So all y'all out here, according to the definition, niggas." They said, "What?" Started laughing, shook hands, and went on back to playing basketball.
Well, let me ask you this then, because Webster's is, I would say, a Europeanized dictionary. And so for the concept of self-determination, which means to define ourselves, name ourselves, create ourselves, and speak for ourselves, that definition could technically not apply to us, because of the negativity that could bring to our self-concept. And so as we continue to work to define ourselves, How can we characterize ourselves in a more, I would say, in a tone or context that brings a more positive perspective to ourselves if we're doing the naming?
Well, it's like I tell the students at Armstrong, there's nothing anybody can say out of their mouth to hurt you unless you allow it to.
Mm-hmm.
Despite what they may say. What they may say or call you, that cannot hurt you unless you allow it to. And I said, I refuse to give y'all that power over me to be able to utter a word or something that's going to buckle me and get me all blown up and just make me just go off. I don't get, you know. So whatever you say, you as an individual know who you are. You know? You know, so you can't let others, define that or make you worry about, have them say a word and then it just automatically, if you let it upset you, you condone the meaning. You're basically almost admitting that you that. Because it doesn't piss you off. Well,
right.
No, you know who you are. I'm not gonna let you utter anything. They're going to tear me up, make me angry, and nothing you can say out your mouth can hurt me. That's giving you power over me, and I refuse to give somebody that power over me to be able to say something that drives me crazy like that.
Right.
And that's what you mentioned earlier, empowering ourselves, getting to know yourself, know who you are. And that's what the key to that is, truly understanding, you know, our past. I mean, we've got to be honest. When our folk walked off that plantation, I mean, you know, back in 1863, that term, Negro, nigger, colored, boy, those were some of the words that were used to describe us.
Right.
And we were using them on each other.
True.
Is that what we said? You know, we said, oh, that's a house nigga. That's a field nigga. Meaning, yeah, that's a nigga that work in the field, or that nigga work in the house. Well, so we those had been ingrained into our minds. I mean, other than the fact that what is Booker? What the hell does Booker mean? You know, that's my name. That's what people use to at birth. Family gave me, let's call him, we're going to call him Booker Leroy Chambers. What does that mean? I always say, it means nigger. That's all that name means, nigger. Jackson, Markson, Jameson, Bubba, Billa, Blue Boy, you know, all the names that we, now, in later generations, we started to name our children names that supposed to have meaning, because that's what your name should. Your name should be a reflection of your character, or what what you are. For example, I named my youngest son, my wife and I, Jamil Hassan. Okay, Jamil Hassan means, in Arabic meaning of names, beautiful, attractive one who will bring about a change. You know, and that's what you see in your children and the character, what that person, that's what the name should do. So it's what we define ourselves as, and we need to stop letting others define us, you know, and can throw a word out to just drive us crazy. Just get, you know, nigga, nigga, and we get a what? And now we said the N-word, and white folks can use that without getting their butt kicked, the N-word.
Mm.
How ridiculous. If you're going to get mad because he called you a nigger and want to whip his butt, then get mad and want to whip his butt because he called you the N-word, because he's saying the exact same thing.
Right.
He's just saying the N-word. You may as well say the nigger. Because in your mind, that's what he's saying, right?
Right.
The
yeah.
N-word. When someone says, oh, the N-word. When you hear somebody say the N-word, you know he's saying the nigger. You know? But just so I said, but just. Because I say the N-word instead of the nigger, it's not an insult. That's ridiculous. You know?
True. Well, you mentioned the goal and the purpose of slavery, right? So we'll talk about that for a minute. And you said to destroy us mentally. And so the conditioning of slavery removed our ability to know who we are. How do we recover from that? In 2020, with all that's going on, and we know the conditioning process, we know we've learned our vocabulary through this system of conditioning. We've learned who we are or who we thought that we would be, becoming three-fifths of a human being and dehumanized in so many different ways. How do we recognize who we are, and what's the steps to that process?
We're going to have to – we talked last weekend about individuals and being an individual. Everybody wants to be an individual, and et cetera, et cetera. I am an individual. I'm not part of a whole. I'm an individual. Well, okay, as an individual, we got to look within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It has to start with each and every one of us looking inside of us. Like Michael said, taking a look at the man in the mirror. We've got to focus on we know who we are. I mean, you know who you are as a person. You know things about yourself nobody else knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's locked in you. You know your good, kindness, everything about you as a person. In that, we've got to focus on being who we as individuals know we are. And as I like to say, I'm searching for the God in me. I'm searching for that greatness. I'm searching for that righteousness in me. And then let me reflect outside. That's what I am inside. Let me reflect the God in me. Let me live like I know I should be living, me as a person. And if we all do that, if I search for the God in me, truly search for the God in me, being honest with myself, that's imperative. We must be honest with ourselves. If I find that God in me and you do the same, then we're going to find each other. Then we become that one. You know, that one mind.
Right, right. Now, I know you talk about becoming the one. Remember you talked about that before?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell our listeners, be the one? What is that all about?
Be the one is, like I was just saying, you be the one to do what you know is right, regardless of anybody else. Regardless of, one of my golf partner's son once said to me one time, we were talking about the world and some things he could do, we could do together, et cetera. And he said, look, one man cannot change the world. He said, I'm just one man. I can't change the world. And I said, I agree with that, but I can die trying. You know, I've got to be respected. If I'm standing all alone, then let me stand all alone. But I'm going to do what I know is the right thing and that I should do. In other words, be, if I can relate it to the Bible, be Jesus. Be the one. Be that one that despite everything that's going on around you, all the hell, all the negativity, everything, I mean, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb. Stick out like a sore thumb. Be the one. That's what, you know, and just say it and commit to that. I will die being the one. I will die doing what I know is the right thing. Whether anybody else come along with me or not, I'm going to do it. I'm the only one, so therefore I'm going to do it. I'm just going to go along with everybody else. No, be the one. Easier said than done, but that's what be the one is. Be the one. And if we all be the one, then again, we will become one. And we'll be a one mind, you know?
Okay, how do we get to this one mind? You know the status of our communities right now. You know the impact of what slavery, and I think you said on one of our other shows, slavery did its job. Can you go into more detail about what you meant by that?
Yeah, it. Like I said, slavery, when slavery was thought of, the folk that did the thinking of it had a plan. They had a goal, someplace they wanted to go. They wanted world domination. Okay? That's my look at it, my take on it. They wanted world domination. What do we need to do to dominate the world and build us a world? We need to control the minds of great people. We need to get them working for us and use them to build our empire. Okay, how do we do that as a people? That's not going to be easy. Well, they had to identify us in the people, in us. They had to identify, I hate to use the term weakness, but they had identified a way that they could come in and just take control of us to put that process in place. But the goal was all along, we've got to destroy these people mentally. We've got to put the fear of God in them. We've got to put the fear of us in them. And we knew, and they knew, this wasn't something that was going to take 2-3 weeks, 2-3 months, 2-3 years. Generation after generation. You know, the teachings are the original slaves. Basically, all they were used to do was reproduce. But they couldn't control them. And then you take the offspring, you separate the offspring from the parents. And that's what we have it on plantations. Now you got a child that no mother, no father, that you're controlling, and you're treating him like your slave, your nigger, and you're putting that fear. They say they would stab pregnant women in front of black folk and ripped open the stomach for the fetus to fall out, and then crush the fetus in the head in front of other slaves to see. You know, tie a brother up to 4 horses, one arm on one horse, one leg on one arm on the other, one leg on the other, and, you know, and then slap all the horses and they go off in different directions in front of other slaves, putting that fear, that complete fear in the slaves, and the slaves becoming eventually, it get to the point, because in the first 100 years or so of slavery, we were in shackles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically 24/7. You slept in shackles. You know, you had armed guards. You know, because the master knew, if these Negroes got to lose, we don't have hell on our hands. So they had to keep them chained and shackled, whip them to make them work, and so forth, until they got to the point where they could take the shackles off. He not going nowhere. She not going nowhere. Because they don't know who they are any longer. And they afraid of us. That fear in them. You know, that's what it was. So when you get to January 1st, 1863, again, when you say, okay, you're not slaves anymore, I can't, you know, we don't change the law, you're free to go. If we had been truly free, we would have said, okay, send me back home. Give me back everything you took from me. My name is no longer Bubba. My name is no longer Booker. My name is no longer Butch. You know, Biscuit, Jackson. Give me back my name. Give me back my religion. Give me back my God. Give me back my culture. All the things you took from me that made me the man and woman we were, the men and women we were, before you put us into slavery. You just freeing a slave now, and that's not free. I'm totally destroyed. That's why hundreds of us said to Master, where are we going? I don't have nowhere to go, Master. Master, can we stay on the plantation, please, sir? Please, sir. And the Master said, well, I can't pay you. Then that's when they came up with sharecropping. You can stay and work the land and stay in your little shack like you've been doing. Ain't nothing changed, but I can't make you stay, but you can stay and do that. And they said, yes, sir, boss. We'll stay, Master. That's what we'll do. And the house niggas stayed in the house, and the field niggas stayed in the field, and everything continued to work, and we have so-called freedom. And then along come the Klan to put more fear in niggas now because you still ain't free. And that's what, you know, that's the simple part about slavery. If we were truly free on January 1st, 1863, we would have left here. Insisted on it. Send us home. You got me to the point now, I don't know where home is. I don't even say that's home no more. I'm not African. I'm not from Africa. I'm American, man. Hell, I ain't going back no damn Africa. For what, man? I ain't lost nothing over there. I ain't never been. They done totally destroyed you. For you to make ignorant statements like that. You know, totally destroyed as a people. And putting it back
together.
Let
me ask you this. Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say that old, what is it, fairy tale or whatever, Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. People say that's us. Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. So you can't put us back together again, is what they say. Say, we had a great fall. Was on top of the wall. Had a great fall. Now all his horses and all his men can't put that Negro back together again. Humpty Dumpty. You know, that's us.
How do you see us living with that fear that you talked about? And then what are some ways that you think that we can heal? You know, we work with young people. We work with their families. We see the dysfunction. How do we recover from the destruction mentally of slavery, from that great fall you talked about, and from that fear that was instilled in us in slavery?
A couple things. One, we got to learn to love ourselves. You have to learn to love your black self. Paramount. Because once I love me as a black man, once I embrace that and I love me as a black man, then I'm going to love you. I can't do nothing to harm you, nothing to destroy you. Because when I see you, I see me. And I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to respect myself. I'm going to respect my woman, respect my children, my neighborhood. It starts with self-love. You got to learn. We have to learn to love ourselves. And the second thing is, get over the fear of death.
Mm.
I mean, death is inevitable. It's coming anyway. One thing you know for certain when you're born, you're going to die. So enjoy that time from cradle to grave. And don't fear the grave. You know, don't fear the grave. Because if you fear death, you cannot enjoy living. You can spend your life worrying about dying. I mean, if it comes, it comes, baby. You know what I mean? You can't live life be afraid of it. So what else, what can they do other than kill you? So if you get rid of that fear of death, you can get rid of the control over you. Because I'm not afraid to die.
Well, let's talk about that first step, right? You said love yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
How can a completely dysfunctional person learn to do that without being taught it in school or at home? Or what would you suggest to the listeners that would be the first step, in just your opinion, to self-love?
Like we said earlier, you got to be the one. See, you got to be the one. That, like I said, I'm gonna stand out at school because I love myself. I'm gonna stand out at school. I don't care what anybody else say. I'm gonna reflect that love of self. I'm gonna do the right thing. That's what we gotta do. You gotta love who you are as that black person. You know, it starts with you. It has to start with you. And let the world see you, your greatness. And of course, brother, I didn't grow up with the mindset that I have now, you know, when I was younger, okay? I had to evolve to this point, okay? So when I started to change, because I grew up like most of us, in a Christian family.
Okay.
I mean, my great-grandmother, Annabelle Chambers, was the greatest Christian I've ever known. Okay? And I tell people all the time, if there is a heaven, I know for certainty she is there. Okay? So I was in that, all of my people, like most of us, I grew up in the church. So then when I started to, through college, you know, being in school and really using your mind. And when I finally took on the challenge of education, you know, as a youngster, I was intelligent. I was smart in school, getting A's and B's. And I mean, I was ahead of grade. I got skipped, in junior high school and all that. So, but then I started playing hooky. And once I started playing hooky and skipping school, boy, I took a dive for about 6-7 years or so. Ended up dropping out of high school, married before my 18th birthday with a child. And at 20, I was in San Diego with a wife and a little, little boy. And when I started to, when I returned back to school, to education and stopped focusing, because I was a journalist in the Navy, so that allowed me to do a lot of writing and talking about researching, being analytical, analyzing things, and studying words, definitions of words, what the word means, how to construct a sentence, a paragraph, a story, expressing your feelings and so forth. And then I learned certain things. I started to, my great-grandma had told me one time, like I said, this great Christian person, when I was in a band as a teenager here in Richmond, and it was a group of white guys and me, and the band became known as the Booker Chambers and the Bell Ass, and we were singing all over the place. And my grandmother said to me one day, she said, "Look, Grandma knows what you're doing, what you're trying to do. I really do." She said, "But don't you never, ever trust them," meaning white people. And she said, "Don't never, ever trust them." And coming from her, that had a profound effect on me. Because then in my mind, I'm thinking, well, okay, my grandmother, my great-grandmother is telling me not to trust white folk. And I started thinking, I said, well, then that means everything they have told me, I have to question. And I started to do just that. I started questioning. I went to college. I studied New Testament, studied Old Testament. I studied Islam in college. And when I first went to San Diego, I was gone 3 years before I came back to Richmond. When I came back to Richmond, one of my brothers I grew up with, in fact, he just died a few weeks ago, we got into this religious debate, and he had just gotten to the Nation. I was still examining Christianity, so I'm defending Christianity. And I was a college graduate at this time.
Okay.
John was an eighth grade dropout. So in my ego and in my mind, John was beating me to death in this conversation. He was making points about Islam over Christianity. And I was like, oh, my God, that's another left hook. That's another right. Ooh, that's a body blow. Oh, man. I was like, wait a minute. How is this Negro going to teach me something when he dropped out in the eighth grade and I'm a college graduate? And so my justification to myself became, I know what it is. John knows the Bible, and John knows the Quran. He knows Islam. I don't really know either one. So I got to study and get myself together, then come back and have this debate with John again, because I need to educate John, because John done been brainwashed. These people have been, they've been whipping up on John. Them people gonna trick John. So when I go back to San Diego, I'm studying. I'm studying Islam. I'm studying the Bible and all. And I begin to realize the points he was making, I was seeing the Bible justify his points. And I was like, oh, my God. I said, John, he's going back and back. And so eventually I got to the point where I said, I started calling him Brother Rockman. I said, Brother Rockman is right. I'm not going to be stupid. If you're saying something and I see what you're saying is the truth, then I'd be a fool to walk away from it. I got to give you props on that. Brother, you're right. I'm just going to not disagree with you for the sake of disagreeing with you, because I'm wrong. And I'm going to argue my wrongness, if that's a word, So, yeah, show me something, prove it. And I was like, he got a point. And so more and more and more. So then when I started to embrace Islam, then then you start sticking out in my own family, in my own household. In my, everybody I'm around, you know, in the church, I become the oddball. I become, as I say, the white sheep of the family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I hung with that. I stayed with it because I stayed with the points that I knew were right, that was making sense to me. And I had gotten to know the Bible a little better and the Quran so I could make those points. Instead, no, to me, this is what I got to accept it as being, you know, it's the truth. And so, and that's, I stuck out, I still stick out. Because I'm that oddball, as they say.
Okay.
But, hey, be the one. You know,
all
be
right.
the one. I'm sure I got the respect of all my family members, my brothers, my sisters, you know, they love me dearly. You know, they may say, man, my brother a little crazy. But yeah. No, but they know, okay? They know, no, that's my brother. He has valid points, and you stand by yourself. I'm not saying stand alone necessarily, but stand by what you know and what you believe in. You've got
mm-hmm.
to do that. Like I said, if you're the only one, you've got to stand by what you know and who you are. You can't go with this and go with that and go this way and go that way and go a different way and win. You know, you got to be
right.
who you are. You know, and
well,
I'll die by that.
We got 3 minutes left in our conversation. So for
yes,
our
sir.
Listeners today, as we sum up this conversation on what black people need to know or what African Americans need to know, give us a closing statement. And again, I appreciate your time. What you got for me, brother?
I got to come back to love yourself. That's the start. We've got to understand the importance of self-love.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key to our success as a people. That's the key to us changing and changing our way in this world is love ourselves. Show the world that love of self. You know, as we see now, Black Lives Matter. I told someone last, you don't have to tell me Black Lives Matter. I'm black. Okay? I don't
mm-hmm.
need you feeling sorry for me. I don't need you giving me pity and saying, oh, yeah, we're going to pull a little black folks. No. I love myself. There ain't nothing you can do or say that take me off of that, of who I am. Because I'm going to do what's right by myself, meaning myself, my people. Love yourself. We've got to love each other and start with loving yourself as a black man, as a black woman. If we do that, man, you'll see the change in the world. The world will change the minute black folks truly love ourselves and we stand up. Then you say Jesus back.
All right. All right.
You know, truly.
Well, thank you, brother. We had a conversation with Brother Book today. We appreciate you coming in. I'm going to call you back on the show again. Tune in on Saturday for our Saturday show. This brother talked about hate. He talked about love. He talked about fear. He talked about our great fall. And he talked about some things that we need to do. That step is taking that first step and loving yourself. How to do that? Become the one. Work on yourself, examine yourself, but you have to become an example, right? Go back into your community, listen to this show, share those values as we continue to work on ourselves. Get away from the negativity and become positive, being the one that can make a change right where you are in your community. Thank you, Brother Book. I appreciate you. Join us on Saturday. For the Saturday show at 2 p.m., 845-277-9250 will be the number to call. Join us on the web at www.naa.weebly.com. Join the movement. The empowerment movement is 365 days of African-American empowerment through the Empowerment Association. And we love you so much. And I will talk to you soon. Take care. Become the one. Peace.